learned early on that it is a very technical field. There's plans and specs, and there's quote unquote tough industry, and there's tough personalities in it. But at the end of the day, you take all the quantifiable things out, and it's person to person interaction. And that's really the heart of construction, is how your relationships. Everybody knows the old adage, you do business with people you know and like. And it's the same with any type of relationship, whether there's financial aspects of it or not. And that element was really missing in terms of the formal training that I've received.
Welcome to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. This show asks questions that everybody is thinking about but doesn't want to say out loud. It's about tackling complex topics like, why are there so few women in senior leadership positions? What is it going to take to change this? Each episode is a combination of motivation and tactical strategies to get ahead. We get out of our comfort zones and we take action. We learn, grow, and create opportunities. I am your host, Andrea Jansen, a certified executive coach with an MBA, and since 2018, I've coached over 1,000 construction professionals to level up their leadership. Let's get started. Angelo Suntries is a passionate leader in the construction industry with 17 years of experience. He has represented both contractors and owners and understands the struggles from both sides of the fence. Angelo believes that focusing on the human principles of connection, including effective communication and fostering healthy relationships, is a critical part to ensuring a successful future of the construction industry. In this conversation, we talked about why relationships matter in the construction industry and how to build them, transactional versus transformational leadership behaviors and how they link to business success, the generational gap in the construction industry, and why trust is the biggest problem facing the industry today. I learned a lot from this interview, and I hope you do as well. When I started Ambition Theory over 5 years ago, I knew that if we genuinely wanted to make the construction industry inclusive for women, that change needed to start at the top. But 5 years ago, nobody was ready to hear this message. Something has shifted recently, though, and it's really exciting. Organizations are reaching out because they want us to do a presentation for their leadership teams, and in some cases, the entire company. They see that up until now, the burden of change has rested entirely on the shoulders of women. If this message speaks to your association or company, we want to hear from you. Visit ambitiontheory.com/book-a-call to learn how you can book a presentation for your organization. Angelo, welcome to Ambition Theory, Women in Construction. I am so excited that you are joining us today. Can you introduce yourself and share what you do?
Sure, yeah. And I just want to start by saying I'm thrilled to be here. We've connected in the past, and it's always very energetic and entertaining conversation. So I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, basically, I'm Angelo Suntries. So I'm kind of an MEP manager in the general contracting space by day. And I have my little side passions at night that I've started working on, specifically on leadership and effective communication, and trying to improve the construction industry through what I like to call the human side of construction, kind of the interpersonal relationship side of things.
And you just wrote a book called The Human Side of Construction. Congratulations. I loved reading it. So much good information in it. And that's what we're here to talk about today. But before we dive in on the book, I want to go back and talk about how we met, because I first met you because you showed up in a free webinar that Ambition Theory was hosting. And you brought this incredible level of energy and excitement. People always tell me I have a lot of energy. I'm like, who is this person in the audience? Because they have maybe even more energy than I do. And you were so excited because we were talking about transformational leadership. Mm-hmm. And I remember you like participating. You showed up, you kept showing up because we had multiple ones in the same week. And I just read your book. And really, as I'm reading it, I'm like, Angela wrote a book about transformational leadership and how to actually learn the behaviors to become a transformational leader. And I don't know if you knew you were doing that at the time, but when I was reading it, I'm like, this is a guidebook to becoming a transformational leader, but I'm so curious because it is not common in the construction industry that people recognize and value those transformational behaviors. Can you take us back to when you realized that kind of relationships, connecting with people, and looking at the human side was really the most critical piece to having a successful career in the industry?
For sure. Yeah. No, I can expand on that and kind of love to talk about it. So yeah, I kind of realized it very early on. You know, I've been in construction for 17 years and I came from an engineering background and learned early on that it is a very technical field. There's plans and specs and there's quote unquote tough industry and there's tough personalities in it. But at the end of the day, when you take all the quantifiable things out and it's person to person interaction. And that's really the heart of construction is how your relationships. Everybody knows the old adage, you do business with people you know and like, and it's the same with any type of relationship, whether there's financial aspects of it or not. And that element was really missing in terms of the formal training that I've received and other people received, because taking engineering or architecture, whether it's college, university, you learn very quantifiable things, concrete metrics. Even when you get into the professional side of things and you take, say, a project manager, you learn about risk management, cost management, stuff like that, very finite things. But what do you deal with on a daily basis? Like, where's the training on how to resolve conflict or how to deal with difficult people, how to have difficult situations? And that's what construction is. Like, at the end of the day, you spend most of your time, if you're in coordination or management or even estimating, dealing with people. And with people comes their own set of challenges. I always like to say, but the problems are easy to solve, but people make it difficult. So I thought, you know what, there's a topic here that, you know, there's a bit of a gap in our training and in the construction industry in general. And the more I started talking about it, the more people started to agree and kind of get on board, and the whole movement kind of started to gain momentum. And that's kind of how I got into the book, which we'll get into later. But it was funny, the first time I went to the webinar and you mentioned that, I didn't even realize it at the time. I didn't even really know what transformational leadership meant. But something about it struck a chord with me. So I signed up. And as soon as you started talking, this is the stuff that I'm passionate about and what I think about. And that's why I got so fired up in those sessions, because I didn't even realize it at the time. But that's exactly what I think is missing in the industry and what we really need to talk more about.
So you've been in the industry 17 years. Is there a point where you realize, okay, this technical skills that I have all this training to support me with, like, was there a point where you're like, okay, I gotta learn something else?
Yeah. So I learned pretty early on that like I mentioned before, the kind of communication relationship side of things was critical to anybody's career. But as I gained more experience and talked to more people, I was fortunate to have some good mentors along the way. I kind of reached a point in my career, and I think it came about 8 to 10 years in, where I think it takes that long to really master the craft, whether you're in mechanical or electrical or general contracting or construction management, whatever the field is. And it probably has some sort of merit behind it about number of hours you put in. But I think you reach a certain point where you kind of get to a threshold of your foundational knowledge, like the technical side of things. And then from there, you reach a fork in the road. You can go down the road of managing people and leading teams, or you can become more of a technical expert in focused areas. So I reached that point in my career where I said, you know what, I think I know enough to, you know, be dangerous. And I was always passionate about leadership. I've always been passionate about mentorship and, you know, sharing my knowledge with others. And it kind of coincided in my career with an opportunity to get into a management position. And that's where things really started to take off. And I started focusing on more of the people side of things.
Okay, I love it. So is there a spot in people's career where they typically get stuck? Or is it a very straightforward, like 8 to 10 years in, you kind of are in the fork in the road, you change one way, and then it's smooth sailing? Or is it more of a struggle? Is there roadblocks along the way?
Yeah, well, getting to the whole transformational leadership, which to me is just connecting with people and breaking down walls and kind of thinking critically and not following the status quo. My experience in construction, talking to other people, there's very specific roles, and the term silo is arguably overused, but there are walls in between these positions, right? Especially if you get onto a bigger site. If you're a project coordinator, you're stuck in a box and you have a very specific job description and you're out on this project site, not even really connected to head office or other people in the company. It can be a little bit isolating. So I think a lot of people find themselves on this career path where it's nice to have a clear progression plan where You go from coordinator, senior coordinator, assistant PM, PM. But you might get 5-10 years in, and I have friends and acquaintances who share this experience where it's like, you know, you get on the track and you keep moving forward and you keep your head down. And then one day you realize, like, is this what I wanted to be doing? Not that they don't like construction, they want a major change. But so they never, I don't think you reach a point where there's one fork in the road. I think people have the power to kind of create their own destiny in a sense. And that's where like the human side comes in. I know I'm big on not just networking, but connecting with people. You never know what connection is going to put you one step closer to somebody you need to talk to, not necessarily to get a promotion or a raise or change companies, but to help you solve a problem, right? Because in construction, the knowledge you need is so vast, like even within a specific trade, it's impossible for one person to know every single thing. But what you can do is know the person to call to get the right answer. And that might take 2, 3, 4 phone calls. But if you build your network and you treat it properly, you don't just use people to get information, get ahead. You actually have to provide them value too. But that'll help you kind of create your own destiny and build your knowledge base like that.
I like that you use that analogy, like the head down working. And then all of a sudden you're like, is this where I want to be?
Yeah.
So interesting, because it's really hard to build relationships when your head is down, you're just in the technical details, and it's really hard to see the options, right? Like maybe there's not just 2 paths, maybe there's like 5 paths. And if you got your head down, you're not even open to seeing that, you're not even open to helping people, you're not really open to being helped, you're just kind of plowing through. And
yeah, and for sorry to interject, there's something else popped in my head though. But and it's not necessarily just making a next move in your career, like getting a promotion or changing tracks. It's like the way you do things, and it can segue into the stuff that you talk about and what I cover in my material too, is the whole inclusion piece, right? Like we've all just been operating under the same kind of assumptions and mechanisms and thought processes, and we're at a point in the construction industry now where if we don't change, we're in big trouble. Like I'm going to go off on a tangent here, and that's sometimes I do that, but that's where the good stuff comes in. Like we're at a critical point now. Like I know locally here, we've got so much, like, I hate to sound like a politician, but there's billions and billions of dollars worth of work to be done in the next 10 years in the healthcare sector alone, which is what I've been involved in the last few years. And we have a shortage of people, and we're experiencing the effects right now. So, and it's just going to get worse. And there's more jobs. They're bigger jobs. They're more complex projects. And we're going to lose a lot of good experienced people who there's a big influx of younger people. We need younger leaders to step up, and we're going to lose the people that are going to mentor them. So I don't know. Maybe that's a question we can address, but it's terrifying, but it's equally exciting because it does open up opportunities for people who want to solve those problems. And that's why I always like to flip it back to a positive. But if you're not scared, you should be. That's it.
One thing I read in your book was about the generational gap as being a challenge for the construction industry. And you said it before about there's billions of dollars of work and we need people to do the work. So there's lots of really great jobs that people can have. So can you talk about the difference between the different generations and what they want to get out of work?
Yeah. So I kind of lumped that challenge into two categories that are close to the same, but I'll kind of parse them out. So one is the generational gap. Another is, DEI, which everybody's talking about now. But in terms of the generational aspect of things, like, I don't know, I thought I was kind of crazy until I started talking to more people about it. But I've worked at some different companies of varying sizes, but there was always the same kind of trend. There was a group of people who were predominantly white males in the 55 to 60 age range, at or close to retirement. And then there were a few people in the middle, and then a lot of people around 40 and younger. So there was always this big gap. And maybe it had something to do with the boomers and the generations, and I don't know. But anyway, there's always been this gap. And what hasn't been acknowledged is the millennials and younger, their lifestyles are different. Their goals, their aspirations, their motivations, why they work, how they work, how they communicate is drastically different. And it's created this big divide. So you have this huge need where there's an older population that we need to transfer all that information before they go, because once they leave, they're gone. But it's not as simple as putting people in a room and expecting them to communicate. And that's where it kind of segues into the whole diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation. It's like, yeah, there's not a lot of women in construction. There's not a lot of people in the BIPOC population. So some people might say, oh, well, let's just go and hire more women. go and hire more Black people, more Indigenous people, people of color, and then you smash them together and hope for the best. Like, that's not how it happens. It starts by acknowledging that there is a difference. And it's the same with the generational conversation or different demographics. You have to acknowledge that there are differences and you have to find ways to work around them. Because when you, if you bring people into an environment and you don't set them up for success because the system isn't, that's been operating to their disadvantage for such a long time, you're setting them up for failure. And that's why I have to plug this. I just really love what you're doing for like women leaders in construction. Like, it's such an amazing thing and it's so needed. But I think it extends beyond empowering and sponsoring women, it's educating everybody in the whole system.
Yeah, I 100%.
My blood pressure is coming up here, Andrea. I'm getting warmed up here. This is great.
I love it. And I agree with you 100%. And one thing, it's kind of like that analogy, like when the tide rises, all boats rise.
Exactly.
And it's one of those things. And I love that you said you have to acknowledge, like, I always call it like acknowledge the elephant. It's not that like anyone's bad. It's not that like anyone's not including. It's just like there are societal biases and stereotypes that exist today. They're nobody's fault. They're in every single company and every single industry. Mm-hmm. And if we pretend that they're not there, we're just going to, like you said, it's not setting anybody up for success. But when you can just acknowledge it, that is like, the problem is half, like there's a quote that's like, a problem well defined is half solved, right? If you kind of acknowledge that, you know what, there's differences here, and how do we embrace them instead of kind of trying to like hide the elephant and kind of celebrate that, yes, everything's great, everything's fantastic. And if we just recruit, that's going to solve all of our challenges, which is, I love that you bring that up, because it's scary to want to expose those elephants. It can be scary for people.
It's scary and it's uncomfortable. And I think that's when I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day about, it was specific to posting content on like LinkedIn specifically. But you talk to people and they say, oh, I love your content, I love your message. But you've never seen them like your stuff. They never comment on it. And I think because people know it's going to come up in their feeds, right? And when people are, that's the biggest roadblock to the change we need in the industry, especially regarding making it more welcoming and inclusive, is to have that conversation and address those issues. And once you start to feel that uncomfort a little bit, I think a lot of people shy away and withdraw from the conversation. But guess what? That's not going to solve the problem. Like, it's just going to make it worse. See, we can't keep perpetuating this stuff. Like, my favorite thing, I'm off on a tangent again here. You look at job postings. We're an equal opportunity employer. What does that mean? Like, can you elaborate a little bit on that? Does that mean, oh, we treat everybody the same? Because that doesn't cut it. Like, what are you doing to solve these problems? Anyway, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole.
Totally. I just want to say that, like, I love that you said, like, just recognizing that we are different and just bringing people in is not enough. We need to look at it from a cultural perspective. I love that you included that in your book. Mm-hmm. I want to understand where the idea for the book came about and how did it come to life? Because it happened quickly. Do you know what the number one question we get when speaking to companies about our Leadership Accelerator program for women in construction? We already have an internal leadership program or a mentorship program available, which is great. But the thing is, these programs don't work the same way for women as they do for men. There are many reasons why, but the most striking one that if you're a woman listening right now, you'll probably recognize right away. It's the double bind. We did some research last year and found that 78% of women were told that if they wanted to accelerate their path to leadership, they needed to be more confident. But 70% of those same women were also told that they were being too bossy. Basically, as soon as a woman embodies the traits most typically associated with leadership in the construction industry, they're faced with negative feedback. This is the double bind. And this is why specialized training for women is needed. If you want to learn more about how our Leadership Accelerator program can help you address the double bind and many other obstacles women face on the path to leadership, please visit ambitiontheory.com/LAP.
Yeah, it did. It did. So, and a lot of people ask this, so it's kind of a fun one to explain. So it was probably around the time we first met. I was back in late July, early August. The project I'm on, we built a hospital, and we recently got word that we received essentially substantial completion. So the owner accepted the building, which is a big deal in construction because you fulfilled the contract, and that's a good reason to celebrate. So we had a little celebration, the trailer, we were slapping high fives, everybody was happy. And so I was going home and I turned around and I looked at the building. This is where it gets a little cheesy, Andrea. So I'm a pretty cheesy guy, but I just had this, I was overcome with emotion and just like inspiration because I was looking at the hospital. I was looking around at it was a community hospital. So it's surrounded by a residential area. And I saw like some elderly people walking. I saw somebody pushing their stroller, baby. And I thought like we built a hospital. People are going to come here to have their babies. They're going to come here to visit their families. They're going to come here to heal when they're sick. And to me, that's what construction is. And the big picture really hit me. And that's my ultimate motivation for doing what I do. Like, we're not just building buildings and structures. We're shaping societies and communities and improving people's lives. The way they play, heal, and pray, or eat, or whatever you build, like, you're improving somebody's life. So anyway, I had this moment and I took a picture and I put it on LinkedIn and I kind of wrote something to that effect, not expecting really anything. And it got a ton of engagement. Like for LinkedIn, it's kind of tough to get a lot of engagement, but even that, considering it was my first post like ever, it got close to 300 likes and a whack load of comments. And so I started thinking like, you know what, I think there's a message here that people want to hear more about, because there's two points. One, within the industry, I think we can do a lot better. Job of treating people better, whether it's being more inclusive or being less transactional, just treating people like people. And number two, when you look at the construction industry from outside, it's not a very appealing industry to get into. It's noisy, dirty, dusty. Anytime you see on the news, this job's over budget, this job's late, it's all so negative. So I thought people need to hear more about the good side of construction. So that's, you know, I started posting on LinkedIn. I got into Instagram. And I tried to branch out doing social media stuff. And then I was thinking, you know what? This is cool. Little snippets here and there. People are kind of getting on board. It's getting momentum. But with social media, as soon as you stop posting, stop showing up, people are going to forget about the message. And they'll probably forget you ever existed. So I was like, there's got to be a better way to have a bigger impact and spread the message. Then there were a couple instances that happened at Ellis Thawne, which is just a great company. They really embrace these types of initiatives. And they were very supportive. I said, I want to do this on the side, and they encouraged me to do so. And there were a couple instances. Number one, Kieran Hogg, who's the chief operating officer at the AG last September, he was reflecting on a conversation he had with one of our top clients. And basically this was somebody who had been in the industry for 40 plus years. And they were talking about the relationship that they had with Ellis Thawne, how they do really good work, how they trust each other, how the money stuff is good. And he said, imagine how the industry would improve if everybody treated each other a little bit better. And I was like, that's the stuff I talk about. Like, and I thought maybe it's a coincidence. And then the next week we had another town hall type meeting with senior leadership. We were discussing challenges in the industry. And one person at this level said, it's like people forgot how to treat each other. We don't treat each other very well. I'm like, that's very interesting. You know, that's twice in a week. Like, what are the odds? And then it was like some targeted ad on Facebook or Instagram, I don't remember, but the message was, you know, if you have a message and you want to be heard and you want to stand out in your industry, write a book. I said, okay, that's it. I'm going to do it. So all these ideas I had in my head kind of accumulating over the 17 years I worked in construction, I just started to put them out on paper, and I dictated a bunch and had to edit it afterwards. But yeah, so the ideas and the content actually came very naturally. That's how it happened. So quickly, like I didn't anticipate it was going to come together that quickly. But fast forward 2 months, I put it out on Amazon. I generated a bit of a buzz on LinkedIn. People were really into it. And it actually hit number one bestseller on Amazon. It was number one for a week or so, and which was blew my mind. I couldn't believe that. And yeah, I don't know. That was kind of, I always tell people there's two versions, the short version and the long version of this story, but it always ends up being a long version. So I'm sorry about that.
That's it. Don't apologize. And yeah. Congratulations on getting the book out there and on the initial launch and the buzz that you got. That's amazing.
Thank you.
I'm really curious though, if you got any pushback about these ideas, because you don't see a lot of people talking about the human side of construction.
Yeah. I'm sure there's some people who are rolling their eyes in the background, and maybe even some people probably not listening to this podcast, but other shows I've been on. And I've had that question, like, do people actually think there is a human side to construction? Because a lot of people are tainted, right? And don't think that. Well, first of all, there's a school of thought where this stuff is all too warm and fluffy. Like, we have a job to do. Just keep your mouth shut and do your work. I've never had anybody outright tell me that. But I think it just goes to show you the fact that, like I mentioned, I get a lot of messages and phone calls through my network and say, oh, yeah, it's great what you're doing. It looks, but I know that they've never liked or commented because they're probably not comfortable coming out in public saying that they agree with this stuff. And that's kind of the whole problem. That's why I talk about this stuff, because I think it's on a lot of people's minds. And I really believe that this is the future of construction, just being nicer, being more inclusive. It's going to improve the way we work. It's going to help solve the labor shortage. Because if people start seeing, hey, construction's exciting work, they're talking about all these pros, they're working on improving the human experience within construction, that might be something that I want to pursue in my career. And when you have more people happier, performing better, being taken care of, you're going to get a better output, right? So the whole process of construction is going to improve. Relationships with owners, the buildings you build, bridges, whatever, that whole... So it might sound a little warm and fluffy and a little ambitious, but I think if we all treat each other a little bit better, and it starts with like one connection between two people, and it can kind of fan out exponentially beyond that, it can impact the industry. Does that sound crazy?
It does not sound crazy to
me. Okay, good.
That's inspirational.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's because you agree, though. You're biased.
Yeah, I guess I did invite you on this podcast.
Yeah.
I am maybe a little bit biased. I do have a question, though, and you brought it up when that chief operating officer was talking about the relationship with their client and how they work well together and they trust each other. And in your book, you talked about the lack of trust being the biggest problem in the industry. And I hear about a lot of problems that the industry is facing today, inflation being one, the labor shortage and like supply chain being other ones. But tell me about the reason why you think trust is the biggest problem.
Yeah, well, number one, like if you look at, you know, what a relationship is built on, if you take two or three key pillars, like trust is probably the biggest part of any relationship, whether it's an employee that you hire or somebody you pick to be your spouse or somebody you pick to fix your car. Like you have to trust them to enter into a relationship. And I think because the industry has become so transactional and everybody's watching out for their own back and their own bottom line, a lot of bridges have been burnt and a lot of people have been hurt, like either ego-wise or lost their job for a reason or whatever. So everybody's coming in very defensive, and that trust has been, you take it at different levels, right? Like you could look at the owner contractor relationship. In the past, everybody's heard stories about contractors making so much money on jobs and gouging owners on changes and this and that. And so there's a little bit of trust there because maybe one bad apple spoiled the whole bunch. Even if it's at the general contractor level with subcontractors, like it seems like even if you hire somebody to do work at your house, you're always a little bit leery that somebody's overcharging or not being honest, right? So, and this is just kind of, I think, just happened over the years and it kind of just keeps getting worse. Everybody talks about micromanagers, how it's such a terrible, that's because of lack of trust. Somebody doesn't trust you to do the work and they think that they have to tell you exactly how to do it. So I think, yeah, the lack of trust just impacts everybody on every level of organizations, from the person doing the installation on site, the person coordinating that work, the person managing the project there. So yeah, I think I don't know if I addressed your original question there. But did that help?
That helps. So I want to talk about how do you build trust back up? Mm-hmm. So knowing that kind of like that lack of trust, like where are you charging me too much? Is this fair? Yeah. Am I going to be screwed over? Like, how do you overcome that? Knowing that, because what you said was really interesting. It's like a couple of bad apples spoiled it for everybody. So you're going, even if you are a trustworthy person, you're going into this environment where that lack of trust is the cultural norm. So how do you overcome that?
I think it starts by focusing on the relationship, right? And I've said it before, like people who follow me might get sick of hearing this, but I think before you can engage in any higher level of relationships, whether it's adding on financial financial aspects, contracts, any complex projects like in construction or even like putting a romantic level in a relationship, you have to have like a strong foundation. And that foundation is built on connecting with people. And not in a specific sense like, oh, you're in construction, I'm in construction, let's connect, or we have this common interest. Just chat, get to know the person. That's the biggest strength in connecting and building your network. It's building these meaningful connections with people. Like, I'm big on just small talk. Like, some people think it's a waste of time or irrelevant, but that's a great way to build a relationship with somebody. And by showing a little bit of interest in not just what you have to do for work, what you've been hired to do, it really strengthens that bond, and that person will go above and beyond for you, and you'll do the same for them type of thing. So getting back to your question, like, they might sound a little bit far-fetched to say, oh, if we just start treating people better and building our relationships and connecting with people, it's going to solve these complex money type problems. But I think it will, because if you're genuinely invested in somebody as a contractor and you build a relationship with an owner, and you're assuming you're a decent person, which I want to think most people are, you're not going to take advantage of somebody if you are invested in a relationship that's dynamic, being two ways, and understanding that as a contractor, yeah, you've hired me to do a job, I'm trying to make money, but I know I'm going to run into an instance where I need to have a conversation with you, a difficult conversation. And if the relationship's good, we can resolve these problems better. Because everybody gets along when things are going great. But when the stuff hits the fan, I know I can't swear on here. When the stuff hits the fan, which it happens daily in construction, that's when you need to have those skills and those relationships though to make progress, right? And resolve that conflict.
Okay. So Angel, in the book, this came up in a bunch of chapters, this like mindset that things are a zero-sum game. And if you approach any type of deal or relationship that way, there is always a loser. So can you explain that concept and talk about how we can go away from that zero-sum game from a place of opportunity? Because you did say there's billions of dollars of work, yeah, right? There's opportunities, yeah, for everybody to make money in the construction industry. How do we shift towards that mindset of opportunity?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it comes back to something I kind of mentioned before about, and you know, I hate to say it again, but the silos, right? Like, a lot of people are taught to focus on their own scope, schedule, and budget. And you put the blinders on to what's going on around you. So you're so focused on meeting your objectives as a project manager or a coordinator or even a higher level that at some point you kind of, and this is what really bothers me because I've seen it before, how you know, focus on so much on short-term financial gains that you sacrifice long-term organizational success, right? And those, there's a lot of people who have stories of being tainted or having bridges burned or burning bridges themselves because of, you know, money-related issues or scope things on site. But like you said, and that kind of, you know, creates a bit of a scarcity mindset. But like we were touched on before, there's so much work out there. If we're all smart about it and how we bid it and how we execute it, there's enough money to be made for everybody to go around. So I think that's the biggest thing to focus on is, you know, the whole abundance mindset that there is enough for everybody. You don't need to take it all because greed is a big problem here too, which is kind of perpetuating the whole transactional thing. It's just the greed of people who want to keep it all for themselves. But just realize what's enough for you and share with other people and make things better for everybody.
And I think that goes back to that relationship that you said, that COO and that client, when they spoke together, they talked about that's a business relationship of two clients having a transformational relationship and working together and both companies benefiting and winning and working together in the future. So I think that's a testament of what can happen when that works out. Because if you're in the transactional mode, it's like you're going job to job, paycheck to paycheck. Like you're worried about like where the next piece of work is going to come from. But if you have those relationships, then you have more stable business.
Right. And it was the same with the sponsorship idea. Because like you mentioned, I've been in programs where you're matched with somebody and it's more of like a coaching thing. And it feels like an obligation that's a little bit uncomfortable, but it's a sponsorship is more of like an active process where you're not just sharing knowledge, you're actively supporting the person, helping to promote them. I don't necessarily mean a promotion, like a raise or a title change. Well, you're promoting that person, you're enabling them to be their best and push their boundaries and reach their potential. So I love that. I think the difference is the active versus the passive side. And mentorship is I think it's a bit of a touchy conversation. I talk about it in the book. A lot of people, younger people especially, are looking for a mentorship as a tool to help them in their career and like a formal process and regular meetings. Like the mentors I've had, even though I've been through quote unquote mentorship programs, yeah. It's people who I kind of organically came across. We really meshed and they kind of helped and guided. And there's still people I reach out to. There's 2-3 people I still consider my mentors that I'll call if I'm in a difficult situation. And I didn't know it at the time in me, but it's the active part about having somebody who is really invested and cares and wants to help you succeed.
I want to wrap things up. And at the end of every podcast, actually at the end of every webinar and every coaching conversation we ever have with the client, it always ends with a 24-hour action, because it's great to talk about these things. Mm-hmm. It's great to read the book, but things don't happen unless you implement it and take action. So we end things with a 24-hour action, because we talked about a lot of things today. You gave us so much great knowledge. What can people do? And that's something they can do today or tomorrow, a baby step to start implementing the tools in the book, start being more human at work, start being more relational at work. How can people do that?
This is an exciting question, and I'm glad you asked, because yeah, you're right. You can have all the information in the world. If you don't know how to use it, then you know it's useless. So some actionable things. I would say tomorrow, go out of your way to talk to 5 people. And I mean, actually talk to them. Because how many times you encounter somebody and you're like, hey, how's it going today? And they say, good, how are you? And you say, good. And then you keep going. That's not talking. That's not interacting. Like, actually say, how are you doing? You know, how was your evening last night? What did you do on the weekend? Oh, you took your kids to a soccer or hockey. That's cool. My kids play hockey. You know what I mean? And find those commonalities and build those connections. So that's maybe a challenge to people who are listening. 5 people, have a meaningful conversation. And it's not, can or can't be work related. But get into an actual conversation and actually engage rather than just that transactional surface level stuff that, and don't get me wrong, I do it too, because it's part of human nature. Sometimes you don't feel like talking to people, but try and go out of your way to make a connection with 5 people.
I love it. And how do people get the book and how do people connect with you?
Yeah, so I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I post a couple times a week. I've got a website set up. There's some other educational type resources there, angelosuntries.com, just my name.com. And yeah, the book is on Amazon. So if you Google, even if you Google human side of construction, I think it's probably one of the first ones that comes up, or a human side of construction book. But yeah, check it out. And I'd love to hear what you think about it too, Andrea. It's been a pretty cool experience so far.
I love it. So thank you so much for coming on our podcast. I love that we met in a webinar and now we have this interview. And I feel like there's going to be more opportunities in the future for us to connect. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, thank you so much for having me. And again, I really love what you're doing and it's really needed in the industry. So.
Hey, before you go, I wanted to take a minute to read a review of our podcast. This review is from Kinia from Canada. Andrea asks incredibly thoughtful, well-researched, and practical questions to provide actionable strategies for her audience. Her dedication and passion shine through in her preparation and delivery. Thank you so much for that generous review. We really love hearing from our listeners. And I'm wondering if I can ask you a favor. Can you take a minute and leave us a 5-star review and a comment on Apple Podcasts? That really helps us to get the word out so that we can keep making episodes for you for free. Thank you for listening.